Hi there, I'm Natalie Silverstein. I'm an author, a speaker, a mom of two teens and one emerging adult, and a passionate advocate for family and youth service. While I was researching my second book, Simple Acts, The Busy Teen's Guide to Making a Difference, I learned about so many big-hearted tweens and teens who are volunteering, fundraising, starting nonprofits, and becoming social entrepreneurs and activists. I wanted to hear their stories, and I wanted to celebrate them and share them with the world so that everyone can be as inspired as I am. I hope that after listening to these short episodes, you'll go out into your community and share your light, your talents, gifts, and strengths to help others. Because the truth is, every person can make a big impact, one simple act at a time. Hey there, friends, and happy summer. Today is the final episode of the first season of Simple Acts Big Impact, celebrating teen changemakers. I'm so proud of the 37 episodes I've recorded, amplifying the stories of more than 40 incredible tweens and teens who are making a real and meaningful impact on the world. The podcast was downloaded over 2,000 times and reached listeners in 15 countries. As I look back over the conversations I've had, I can't possibly pick any favorites. My guests shared personal stories of loss, the ways that one particular incident sparked their curiosity, the concern they felt while observing an injustice. Importantly, they all talked about how they took the next steps from feelings to action to create a project or an organization that makes a difference in their area of interest. They shared the challenges and problems they faced. I learned so much from these changemakers, and I hope you'll go back and listen to all of the episodes because each one is important and inspiring. You know, someone asked me recently, what gives me hope right now? And I said, this podcast and these conversations with big-hearted, motivated, and hardworking tweens and teens. Every teen I met this year is making a difference, one simple act of kindness and service at a time. And they, and all of you, give me hope for a brighter, more inclusive, kinder, and more compassionate future. I'll be taking the summer off to rest and recharge, and I'll be taping new episodes to launch season 2 in September. I hope you'll join me then for more inspiring stories and calls to action. To wrap up this very successful season, I'm breaking the format a bit and sharing this conversation with Ian Sandler, founder of the Riley's Way Foundation. Riley's Way was created to honor Ian's daughter, Riley, who passed away on the last night of summer camp nearly a decade ago when she was only 9 years old. Ian and his wife, Mackenzie, decided to honor Riley, who was a kind, compassionate, and loving friend, by creating a foundation focused on investing in a youth-led kindness movement, providing young people with the programs, support, and inclusive community they need to thrive as changemakers. Riley's Way envisions a future where kind leaders build a better world, and so do I. I interviewed many Riley's Way Call for Kindness Fellows on the podcast this year, so I thought it would be a fitting conclusion to this very successful season to talk to Ian about the important work of helping young people to become the purpose-driven leaders we need for our future. Well, hi there, Ian. Thank you so much for saying yes. It's good to see you.
Hi. It's good to see you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for everything you do for Riley's Way.
It is my absolute pleasure. So before we talk a little bit more about Riley's Way Foundation and what you all do, and I'd like for us to talk about how these kids are sort of the solution for all of the problems in the world as I see it, hope for our future. Can you tell us a little bit about Riley, who she was and why she was so special?
Sure. Riley was my wife, Mackenzie, and she was our first child. And what I like to say is Riley was a good student, a good athlete. What she really excelled at was she was the best friend that you could ever find. She used to get excited when Mackenzie and I would go out for dinner because that meant a babysitter and somebody who is a new friend for her to have. And her favorite thing to do in the world was to connect her friends from different walks of life and to introduce them. So, she was somebody who was going to have a really big impact on this world. She just was. She had big dreams. She wrote about her big dreams. She had a big vision for her future, and it was very much couched in this concept of being super kind and connecting with lots of people around the world.
Well, I mean, I think what's extraordinary about the way that you describe her and the fact that she wrote about the things that she dreamed about is that she was nine. You know, she's a little girl, right? So it's sort of amazing. And you're so right. Like, what could it have been? What could she have become and what could she have done in the world? And so that brings me to when you lost Riley almost 10 years ago now, how was it that you and your wife and your support network came up with this concept of, instead of taking this really horrible thing that happened to your family and turning inward, perhaps, which would be understandable, how is it that you came to this idea of not only starting a foundation to honor her memory, which is amazing, and many people do when they lose someone, especially a young person, but to make that foundation be about this, about raising kind leaders and about young people? Because I think that that is unique. And so tell us a little bit about that process for you.
Sure. We started Riley's Way in the hospital. We started it the day that she was pronounced dead. And it was just very much driven by the fact that we weren't prepared to say goodbye to her, and that we knew that she was somebody who was going to have a huge impact on this world. And we just weren't okay letting that light go out. We had a wonderful support network, both the camp community and then just the broader community of friends. This is any parent's worst nightmare. And so we raised a lot of money. We went online and we raised a lot of money, and we really didn't know what we were going to do. And we did what I was brought up to do, and the way Riley kind of went about her life, which is we just gathered a group of our really close friends and we said, we have this money. We have what should we do? And one of our board members from the beginning is the headmaster at the Nightingale Bamford School. It's my good, super close friend, Paul Burke. And Paul was really a strong voice in highlighting to us, Riley was a young girl who you could never find her without a smile on her face. And she loved her friends. And he just kept pushing us to anchor whatever we did on who Riley was. And so we explored, you know, what happened to Riley. Perhaps could you have emergency medical services on call at camps or places that are just too far away from hospitals? We considered supporting organ transplant. We donated as many of Riley's organs as we could, which unfortunately weren't that many. But one of the things I learned was kidneys of a child somehow can go into a 61-year-old grandmother, which is where one of Riley's kidneys went. And there's not a lot of funding for it. And so there were good pushes in all fronts, but we chose to honor who Riley was. And then we took the additional step, which was controversial. Even I have a very good friend of mine who, she stepped off the board because she didn't agree with our path, which was we were going to do our own programming. And the idea there was very much born out of prior tragedies, in particular watching some of the nonprofits that were set up after 9/11, where wonderful, wonderful, amazing people passed away in that tragedy. But the nonprofits were anchored on the person who passed. And what I saw as we were now, you know, it passed a decade after this, is any organization that's focused on a person, no matter how incredible they are, if it's not about the underlying work, it only lasts for so long. And so we were just students of history on all this. And we very much just anchored on what our goal was all along, which was just a long love letter to our daughter, Riley.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that. And I think that it shows in the work that you do, and particularly in the Call for Kindness Fellow program.
The Call for Kindness is a national micro grant campaign that we give up to $3,000 to a host of social impact projects. We had 35 winners this year, representation from more than 20 states, which is super powerful. We give one-to-one staff support. We get everybody together for an in-person leadership retreat. But the thing that we do that's most important is We have a community, a cohort group of young people who care about kindness. And now they know there are all these other people out there and they all want to make a difference in the world. It's really just a natural extension of what we started doing with these young women, starting off with students from the Young Women's Leadership School in East Harlem and Nightingale and growing from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I was part of your celebration a few weeks ago. And what was really impressive and incredible and moving was this recent retreat that you all had where you brought the fellows together from all across the country to Washington, D.C., and they got to meet each other in person and brainstorm. And there was so much communication happening in that room and connection and the sharing of ideas and the support for each other. I mean, that really is very, very powerful for a kid to get funding and do a little project in their community. That's great. But then to come to Washington, D.C., and meet other kids like themselves who care so deeply about the issues and to exchange ideas in that way, that I think just amplifies it even more. The last question I wanted to ask you is something that I get all the time, which is, you know, people say to me, oh, young people today, all they do is stare at their telephones. They're so disconnected, particularly post-pandemic. They don't know how to interact with other people. They can't make eye contact. They don't care about anything but themselves. And I consistently disagree with that assessment. And this podcast, writing my last book, and then the podcast grew out of that, this podcast has certainly given me tons and tons of ammunition to say, you're wrong. I believe that this generation of young people is incredibly compassionate and empathetic. They care so much about social justice. What would you say to somebody who said to you, ugh, these kids today, they don't care?
I think they couldn't be more far off. I would start off with, I have so much empathy for our teenagers and young people who've grown up during. Think about the mental health challenges one faces from living through the pandemic. And remember, like, that was a very different experience based on your socioeconomic status. So I find myself very often when I'm talking about our work, I talk to plenty of adults, and I plenty of times I have conversations. They say, oh, you know, the world's so, you know, messed up. And those who know me know I'm a glasses half full type of person. But I ask a simple question. I ask about, so what are you doing about it? And, you know, some people really are doing amazing things. And those are often people where I'm like, oh, great. How can I support you? But a lot of people are like, I don't know. And I say, well, then you should take a look at what we're doing at Riley's Way, because what we need, what our young change makers need, are to be connected to wonderfully networked people so they can get the scaffolding, tools, guidance, support, funding,
mentorship, right?
Yeah, that are going to truly, history says that is young change makers that are not jaded. Those are the people that actually drive seismic change. I've now been at this with my family, our friends, and our community for 9 years. We've now touched over 3,000 young people. We've given out more than $2 million in program and in grants. The thing that I keep coming back to is the gift that me and my family have received, because I've fundamentally changed as a person. It's helped me survive what is about as tough a thing as anyone's going to have to struggle with. But this community has given not just me hope, but and my wife hope, but my children are involved with this. My 7-year-old daughter came to DC with us. She stood up and spoke to our kind leaders, and she talked about her sister Riley and what she means to her. My 14-year-old son Brody spoke at Martin Luther King Day at his school, where we have our first boys chapter, and talked about the link between the work of Dr. King and Riley's Way. So to me, again, this is all very selfish. I want to honor my daughter. I want to be a parent to Riley, and to have my children continue to honor and to do really what all Mackenzie and I care about, which is to raise kind, empathetic children who are going to put good into the world we've gotten a gift that's so magnifying. It's because we get to spend all these times with these amazing change makers. And if you do, if you come to any of our events, I promise you, you will leave far more optimistic than you were about the state of the world.
Absolutely. The thing is, change doesn't happen if we all just throw up our hands and say, "Ugh, well, what are you going to do about it?" You know, and that's what I hear from these kids who see an injustice. And instead of waiting around for the grown-ups to do something about it, they actually do something about it. And that's all anybody can do, right? Just one person, but in community with others. And I think that, you know, what you set up is so beautiful. We won't really know the impact of what you've done. All of these 3,000 young people that you've touched, they are all going out into the community, out into the world, and spreading this goodness. I mean, it is only going to completely, you know, change. This is how change happens, right? From the ground up. And I'm just so grateful that you took this really tragic thing that happened to your family and you turned it into something really beautiful and good. And so Riley lives on in this wonderful, wonderful work. And what an honor it is to speak to you about it. Well, thank you so much, Ian. Thanks for sharing this story with us. I cannot wait to share it with my audience. I hope it inspires them to keep doing what they're doing. And if they're not doing anything, to get out there and do something.
If they're not doing anything, come join us at Riley's Way. Come spend time. thank you for taking time and for having me, but really what I want to say thank you for is the amazing work you're doing with our young change makers. The fact that you get to amplify their voice and that they get this experience is so valuable to them as they're going to keep pushing on their journey. So I want to say thank you for everything you do, because that's the beauty of this work, is we're just trying to propel forward and have a long, long-term view on how we can make the world a better place.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, it has been the greatest source of joy for me. I get off the phone every single time with just a huge smile on my face. So it's really helped me. So thank you. Thanks so much, Ian. Best of luck to you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you were inspired by what you heard today, please follow, rate, and review. These things really matter. And if you know a tween or a teen who is doing great things in his, her, or their community, send them my way. I'd love to meet them and share their stories with a world that could really use a dose of inspiration right about now. You can get in touch with me through my website, simpleactsguide.com. Until next time, remember to keep eyes, ears, hearts, and minds open to the needs of others, and always be kind.